move to the eighth case for today, Siriano versus Potter. Murchison.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Denise Murchison. Oh, may it please the Court. My name is Denise Murchison. I represent the appellant in this case, Ruth Serino. This case is a discrimination case under the Rehabilitation Act and a retaliation case. The Postal Service discriminated against Ruth Serino. The trial court granted the Postal Service a Rule 50 motion. Therefore, this appeal follows. I would just like to briefly talk about the history or chronology of this case. Judge O'Meara noted when he dismissed this case that the chronology was somewhat complicated. So I'll go through it because I think it might be helpful momentarily. 1968, Ms. Serino started work as a mail handler. In 1974, she became a carrier of the mail. In 1975, Ms. Serino had her first on-the-job injury. She fell down a flight of steps. In 1978, she was assigned to Lockbox 80, where much of the action of this case took place. And Lockbox 80 is a place that has P.O. boxes. In 1991, she had her second injury. She fell on the job on a freshly waxed floor. In 1991, she was diagnosed with deep vein thrombosis, also known as DVT, and peroneal palsy, which caused blood clotting and swelling of the legs. In August 1992, Ms. Serino received workers' compensation for 1 year. In 1993, Ms. Serino returned to work on a trial basis, and that means 4 to 6 hours a day. In 1974, Ms. Serino took off work indefinitely on her doctor's recommendation. In 1995, she was off of the job for an entire year. Around 1995, the post office sent a letter to their employees, and according to the union contract, if you've been absent for a year and if you want to have a permanent placement, you had to come back to work. She received a doctor's statement from her doctor, and she returned to work in November 1995. And I like to say she had worked in Lockbox 80 from 1978 to 1995 without complaint. In January 1996, she was hospitalized with a stroke. In April 1996, her supervisors asked her for a statement, which she gave them. And I should state that there were times that she did go home early. In May 1996, she submitted the statement from her doctor. And the statement said that she needed a back rest to support her back because she had DVT, peroneal palsy, and lower back pain. She needed to walk every hour, and there was no prolonged standing. She needed these accommodations to do her job. And I would also like to mention Lockbox 80 had a number of employees who were on light duty or limited duty. And that tells us that these employees had disabilities, and that's why they were there. From May 11th to June 1996, or I should say a week in May of 1996, Ms. Serino was transferred to the NICSI unit. Let me tell you a little bit about the NICSI unit.
Well, and that change to the NICSI unit was not an adverse employment situation, was it? And that's one of the things that you have to show.
Yes.
There was no reduction in pay unless that related to the number of hours she worked, but her salary level didn't change or anything. Right?
Well, as I understand it from the Seventh Circuit, they have defined adverse employment action. It could be termination, demotion, or a significant change in responsibilities on the job. Yes, there was a significant change of responsibilities in the NICSE unit, and this was her life when she was there. She was there to repair damaged mail. And she testified at trial when she arrived to the NICSE unit, which was on the eighth floor. Originally, she was on the third floor. And by the way, there was a NICSE unit on the third floor. There was no mail. There were no supplies. And there was not a chair for her to sit on. Therefore, Ms. Serino had nothing to do. In order to repair the mail, you need the glue, you need the plastic to maintain the integrity. I'm sure we've all received these letters in plastic that have been damaged. She didn't have any of this. And that was the adverse employment action, that she did not have the tools that she needed to perform on the job. In January 19...
So remind me of what she was doing. She just would physically go up to that spot and then do nothing and just collect a check?
Oh, well, let me take a step back. In Lockbox 80, it was her responsibility to sort the mail, to rack the mail, and then they say walk off, but walk off means to put it in the pigeonholes. That's what she did in Lockbox 80. And before the problem with the chair, she was happy there. However, when she went to the NICSE unit, and this is her testimony, there was no mail, there was no supplies, and there was no chair. So even worse, and perhaps there should be some precedent here, adverse employment action is not giving the employee the reasonable accommodation that the employer claims they are giving them. In January 1997, Ms. Serino, I should state that she did return to the NICSE unit where she continued to have problems with the chair, and that is in the record. In January 1997, Ms. Serino...
But she continued, just so I understand, I just want
yes.
to mention, so she continued to do nothing from that period until January. I mean, she never got supplies or anything.
Oh, let me clarify that.
Yeah.
She was in the NICSE unit on the A floor where there were no supplies for her. Her testimony was that she was there for a week. Then she filed an EEO charge, and they took her back to Lockbox 80, which is on the third floor. Her testimony was that, not that she didn't do anything, but she had problems with the chair, and then she began to be isolated by her supervisors, and she had to sign out to go to the washroom.
Okay.
So, yes, she had work to do, and she performed it. In January 1997, Mr. Reno applied for disability retirement. And I should say, the facts that I'm giving you, this is in the post office brief. However, I do disagree with one part of the statement of facts. They say that she couldn't perform her job because of the medication. She fell asleep. It was Ms. Reno's testimony at trial that she took naps during lunch. She did not fall asleep on the job. I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Donatelli?
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning, Your Honors. The biggest problem with plaintiff's case is she's never been able to explain how she could apply for disability retirement and in that application, under sworn testimony, say, I'm unable to do the job even with accommodations, and I was accommodated by getting a chair. She's never been able to square that with her now coming to federal court and saying, I am a qualified individual who's able to do the job with accommodation. And, of course, the law of this jurisdiction is when you have those circumstances, you have to do you have to explain the inconsistency between the positions. This was brought up at the trial. There was no explanation there, and there's no explanation in the briefs. Of course, her sworn statement in her disability application that she couldn't do the job is completely consistent with the detailed history that you got from plaintiff's attorney today. You have to remember that before she retired, just within the few years before that, she had been off for almost a year. She came back on a trial basis, didn't do very well, wasn't even working her full days, then was off for another full year. At that point, the Postal Service sent the letter out saying, under the union contract, if you can't perform your job for a year, we have to give it to somebody else. So she goes to her doctor, and her doctor releases her for work. So it was the doctor's attempt to help her maintain, you know, keep her job. She wanted to keep her job, and the Postal Service was working with her to try to help her keep her job. When she came back, though, she still didn't do very well. She had absences. She was hospitalized for a stroke within a few months after that, hospitalized a few months later again for her DVT. And then it was right after that that she showed up with a note from her doctor saying, "I need accommodation." The supervisor looked at it, called the injury comp unit, and said, "Okay," I talked to them, and they said, "Go to the NICSI unit, which is where you won't have to, we can accommodate you with your restrictions." She was there less than 1 week. Apparently, that's when she threw her fit. She didn't want to go up to the eighth floor, and as soon as she went to the EEO office, the Postal Service says, "Okay, then we'll send you back down to your other job, and go back there." So we gave her exactly what she wanted. Even with all of that, nothing worked for her. Not too long after that, she applied for disability, and before it was even approved, she quit showing up. But eventually, it was approved. Within this context, the arguments that you see in plaintiff's briefs and that she was making at the trial really look kind of silly. To answer a few of the questions, Judge Williams, there's no evidence that she lost any pay during her less than week stay in the NICSI unit. In terms of her not getting the supplies for that less than 1 week stay, all she said is, "I didn't get supplies." One would guess she's talking about glue sticks or tape or plastic bags to put the mail in. Whether she got that or not, that she's the only one who testified about that. So it could be possible, as you suggested, that she sat there for a few days and just collected a check. Plaintiff mentioned that there was no chair at the NICSI unit. Of course, the evidence trial describing the NICSI unit said these were all people on limited duty. They were all sitting on chairs. There were the high-back chairs there. Her issue about the high-back chair otherwise, which was the biggest issue at trial, that she needed that and it was constantly missing for her, you have to remember that the approved tool was a rest bar, which is a high-back stool that you lean against as you distribute mail. That was for one of the aspects of her job. She said she needed a chair with a backrest, so they gave her one. The problem is, of course, she's only on one tour. Other employees use that same station when she's not there, so during the other tours, the chair would get moved out of the way. They couldn't use it. So she'd come in, and her chair would be gone, so they'd have to find it again, and this apparently galled her. Fortunately for her, her husband worked at the Postal Service right around the corner, and he testified at the trial that the Postal Service was great about letting him go and look for that chair and bringing it to her. And, of course, the chair couldn't help her with her other duties on the job, which was picking up the mail, dumping it for the distribution, and then later walking it off down a very long hallway to put it into the lockboxes. She has a very confusing argument about being sent to the NICSI unit out of retaliation because it couldn't be retaliation because she hadn't filed her EEO complaint at the time she was sent. There's no explanation to how that one works at all. So it's clear that she had no evidence of discrimination or retaliation. This court has recognized that there are those plaintiffs who come and try and turn the statute on its head. They take the position, in effect, that the statute requires the employer to give them a job, but they don't even have to show that they can perform the job. And that's really the kind of plaintiff who has brought this case to this court today. The district court got it right, and we ask the court to affirm it. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. How much time? You have 3 minutes, Ms. Murchison.
Well, let me start at the beginning. Yes, we can reconcile her disability application with her testimony. She filed the application in January of 1997. Now, remember, she's been working for the post office since 1968 and in lockbox 80 since 1978. And she said in her testimony that I filed that application because the post office would not accommodate me. There is evidence in the record that Ms. Serino did perform her duties. As a distribution clerk in Lockback City, she had three things she had to do. She had to sort the mail, that's undisputed. She had to rack the mail, that's undisputed. She had to walk off the mail. Now, that's where the dispute is.
Well, let me just ask you one question. In this application for disability, she said that she was unable to perform the job. Is that right?
Let me point out something even deeper. That application isn't even in the record. All you have is her testimony about that application. The application is not a part of the record.
That's now, unusual, isn't it?
Pardon me?
What was it? It couldn't be located? Or?
Well,
she didn't have a copy. The government didn't have a copy. That's just kind of unusual. Normally that would come in.
Well, I noticed in reviewing it that the application is not a part of the record. However, she did say, let me get this right, that... I have to apologize. I've lost my train of thought. But her testimony was, as I stated previously, that she filed the application because she would not be accommodated.
Well, I can understand you're giving us the rationale. I was just asking what was on the application, because usually for a disability application, you have to say I'm unable to perform.
There is something else to be considered. The jury, and that's where this case was headed, would be asked whether or not she was performing her jobs up to the employer's legitimate expectations. And if anything, the application would go to her credibility. It's not an absolute bar to the case going forward to the jury. Let me address the retaliation case. Ms. Serino complained about not being accommodated in April of 1996. That's in the record on the April 26th meeting, and again, 1 week into the NICSI unit. I see that I'm out of time. Thank you very much.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement, and we'll pick up the earlier case, number six.